Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you're going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Broadway Breakdown. As always, I am Matt Koplik.
And as sometimes, I am John Wascavage. So sorry, we've been MIA recently, guys. I mean, honestly, we, the news of, Jesus Christ, I already forgot what I was gonna say.
It's early, guys. It's early. We're doing this at an early hour today.
We're also...
The last episode was done so late at night. This is done so early.
So early. We also, this is the first time since, the summer where we are recording many, many miles away. Like, we're back. We're back to a long-distance relationship. And, you know, like, I just have a lot of feelings, and I feel like you're not there for me anymore, Matt.
I'm sorry. I personally enjoy the distance. I think it's a perfect relationship. Enter Bells Are Ringing song right now.
It's a perfect relationship.
Relationship.
Great.
Yeah, like, I don't have to do my hair anymore for you. I don't have to brush my fucking teeth. Like, I'm thrilled.
Right. Meanwhile, now, here I am in full beat, teeth glistening, hair in a poofy bouffant. No, I literally just hopped out of the shower and I look like a wet lasso opso. So,
Well, you showered, so you beat me there.
Woo! I did it.
Woo! So, John, if you could please explain, I was away last week, but you're away this week. Where are you this week?
I am in Pittsburgh, also known as the Steel City, home of the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Pittsburgh Steelers.
You had me at the beginning there, and then you lost me.
Those are what we call in the business sports teams, or as I call them, muscular men on TV that I am sometimes forced to watch on holidays, but I find my own fun in that. Yeah, no, I am out in Pittsburgh right now working at Pittsburgh CLO, doing a workshop for a few weeks of this really awesome new musical that I am super excited about, called Up and Away. It's a story about it's like supposed to be like the origin story of the world's first superhero, like before Superman, before Batman. And he is like, it's basically a story of two brothers. They're both kind of country bumpkins. One is like young and strapping and the other is not. Guess which one I am. And hint, I'm the not. And
I was gonna say, you're the Lois Lane type character, the one who gets rescued from the burning building.
No, I wish. There is there's like a sassy female character, but basically like the two brothers end up developing superpowers through like a series of mishaps when they like end up in the big city, and one ends up being the supervillain and one ends up being the superhero, and there's a love triangle between this girl who's a reporter. And it's really funny because, like, all the villains and everyone else is played by two other actors. And so it has, like, some, like, aspects of 39 Steps. And, like, it's a legit workshop, which is really fun. Like, the first week was a reading. And then yesterday we actually staged a number of, like, chaos in the city. We're actually, just for the sake of that number, I'm playing multiple characters, which may include a blind nun, a disgruntled housewife, and a bride whose wedding just got blown up. So...
I mean... That casting is so on the nose for you that it like scares me a bit.
It really is. Like every character they had been assigning me, like there was just no our director and our writing team for this is not only a literal dream. Like I've never worked with writers who work so quickly and so efficiently, and our director has such like a clear vision, but is so open to like we all like we just play. It was literally just like playing. But every time she was, like, talking about the character, she was like, yeah, she's like, she was just calling me she the whole rehearsal yesterday, and I was like, this feels right.
Yeah.
She gets it.
She does get it.
She really does. So that's why I've broken up our relationship of sitting in your den.
Yeah, sitting in my den. So we're a little on the rocks right now. Rather than drinking on the rocks, we are on the rocks.
You were away, I believe, for some weddings.
Yes. My away was not nearly as professional as yours. When a friend of mine got married, it was a beautiful upstate wedding. I was, however, the only gay male there, so that was an interesting dynamic.
Well, that you know of.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know who was living a lie that day, but as far as I know, everyone there had identified as either a straight male, a straight female. I think there was like one or two gay females, but I was the only gay male. I was also the only male that wore pink, so...
Well, good on ya.
Thank you.
I've recently gotten to wearing pink a lot more this year because I'm like, fuck the man, like, fuck trying to get us down with your cisgendered heteronormative bullshit. Fuck you, Trump.
Exactly.
Not that I have...
That's why I did it, really. I was in middle of nowhere New York upstate to say fuck you to Trump with my pink dress shirt.
I mean, that's literally all I do.
So, all this is to say, we didn't have, like, a set agenda today. I personally was like, I missed the sound of your sultry tones, John, so I just wanted to record for the sake of recording and see what happened.
Yeah, totally, and I missed the sounds of my voice as well, and so I also wanted to record. No, I do feel bad, because we were supposed to record last week, and I just, I had to nip it in the butt. I texted Matt and he was so sweet. And so I'm sorry, fans.
Speaking of nipping it in the butt.
Oh no. There's so many ways this can go.
I mean, do we want to talk about the now pink elephant in the room? Used to be glass closet, now it's pink elephant.
Yeah, you know what? Let's just rip into it. Like,
sure. So John and I actually when we were planning this podcast. Fun disclosure, we originally were going to have like a little mini section in episodes that we haven't done yet called Kevin Spacey Closet Watch. And it was literally just going to be like we would break the conversation for a second and be like, Kevin Spacey Closet Watch, does he come out today? And then you would hear like a door creak and then shut, close, and 5,000 locks get turned and know that he was not going to come out. Nobody's sexuality necessarily has to be out in the open. You know, it's up to you. It's all a personal choice of how you want to be, out in the world. And that's super understandable.
Of course.
Kevin Spacey is, in my opinion, was anyway, a very specific case of an actor who made a choice to be in the closet for a very long time at a time in Hollywood that was not really acceptable if you wanted to have a career. But then got to a point where he was out, but he just wasn't going to publicly acknowledge it. And it's one thing to just sort of say, like, you know, my business is my business. But he would often make pointed remarks in interviews, like joking about, oh, everyone thinks I'm gay. Ha ha ha. Isn't that hysterical? I'm like, clearly not. Or he would,
if you don't mind me interjecting, because this is something I'm very I've been passionate about for a while now. It's not in that he would just like skirt around the topic. If you actually read a lot of the old interviews, or if you dig a little deeper, not even that old, if you go into these moments of when people would try to bring up his sexuality, he would not only like make light of it at times, but sometimes he would really actively deny it and kind of like he would almost put down the gay community in the sense of it's ridiculous. It's so stupid that people think I am not that. I could never be that. It was such an active denial, which really led me to a lot of, I had a lot of issues with him hosting the Tonys this year, and I made a few jokes about it, and then I wrote a post actually on social media about it, and people started going really up in arms and actually started attacking me, because my post was about the fact that we live in a political climate right now where, well, let's call it as it is, there are fucking Nazis running the streets, and they don't get they don't get condemned, but our leader, quote unquote, is so quick to condemn the goodness in this world, and it's things are topsy turvy. We're living in the upside down. Thank you, Stranger Things. Here we have the Tony Award, or here we had the Tony Awards, the night that the theater community opens itself to TV. It's the night that it goes, hey, Hollywood, hey, rest of the world, this is what the theater community is about. This is where the little kids in Kansas who live in the Bible Belt, who know that they're different, who know that they're gay, can watch the magic of theater, can watch out and open and proud and beautiful acts of bravery from artists in the theater community who are not afraid to speak out loud and say, you know, I remember being a kid and watching the first gay couple I ever actually watched kiss in real life on TV was on the Tony Awards, and it took me aback. I was shaken in the best way, because it wasn't on TV. I knew it wasn't actors. I saw two gay men really kiss for the first time, and because they were celebrating, and I was so angry. I was so angry that they chose not only a closeted gay man, but a man who was so actively denied his sexuality and basically put it down and made a sham and made a joke of it for years, to do that in the current political climate when we should literally be walking around with rainbow flags tattooed on our faces to go, hey, no, fuck you, like, you cannot bring us back into the closet, you cannot take us a step back. I was really angry about it, and I don't get angry a lot. I try not to get political a lot online, but I think I've been very actively anti Kevin Spacey for a while now.
Yeah, well, and I hear you, because I do agree. And as you said, there have been so many years where he actively denied it. There are even instances reported where he would like drop out of projects or certain interviews based on who else was going to be working or being interviewed that day as well.
Yes,
literally because of their sexuality. Like for so long he never wanted to be associated with homosexuality. And in fact, in the opening number of the Tony Awards, he made a joke about, you know, people thinking he was in the closet. And yes, it was so fucking bullshit.
I know, I was.
And
I was
again,
mad.
Like, yeah, and as you said, in this day and age right now, where everything is so, as you said, topsy-turvy, we need as many allies as we can get. And for Kevin Spacey to not be an ally for so long,
his own community, for coming out
but like,
now.
And
Jesus, sorry.
So that's the other thing. It's not only the fact that he didn't come out for so long, and again, it wasn't even about private life. He like just distanced himself from it, and. Mm-hmm. You know, there are such a thing as straight allies in the gay community as well.
Yeah.
There are millions of them. Like,
millions.
Yeah, like half of my friends. So he could have, you know, just kept his respective private life and still been an ally. He chose not to be. And it's now when his back was against the wall that he made the moment to come out. Two ways that upset me. One is that, you know, he hadn't been an ally for decades, and now he's pretending that he is.
Right.
And then also only doing it to skirt the headline, which was that he was being accused of sexual assault, which is another thing that has been an open secret in the theater community for decades.
Yes.
I never had heard any reports of him with underage boys, but it is an open secret that Kevin Spacey likes his gentlemen to be under the age of 30, mm-hmm. and, you know, relatively twinkish looking. I'm surprised that he hasn't come after this podcast yet, because John is not going to be under 30 for much longer. You know, we're really like prime demographic for Spacey time.
Yeah, honestly. Well, gosh, I understand. Yeah, I understand that as a person with a certain amount of empathy, I look at the situation and I try to understand. Maybe that's a better way to phrase it. I try to understand mm-hmm. how his thought process was in this situation of like, all right, well, here's this really awful situation. I'm gonna now use it to come out, and hopefully that will maybe quell some of the anger. But no, no girl, give me your hand. I'm gonna slap it because yeah. that is that.
No, it's fucking bullshit. And it's
real quick life lesson. Sexual preference is different from sexual assault. Thank you. Life yes. lesson ended.
Yes. It's just fucking it's infuriating.
He
also used the word choose in his
in his
coming out, which infuriated me as well.
Yeah, if I was a human who owned things like glasses or plates, I would have smashed them all this week. Because mm-hmm. there were so many things about it that are just wrong and awful. And the other thing, too, that was brought up to me by a friend was, it really brings up this, we've talked multiple times about social media and how it changes things. I mean, it changed the course of Great Comet because of a social media mm-hmm. uproar that it was a wildfire that spread like crazy over something that was misinformation. Mm-hmm. There's this trend a friend of mine brought up that they he made this quote unquote apology to Anthony Rapp, being like, "Oh, I'm so sorry." But no, he didn't.
What makes it even worse, he was like, I have no recollection of this, but it basically sounds like me, and it's because I'm actually gay. It's like, fuck you. Oh, my God.
Well, he almost did that thing, too, of, like, victim blaming, too, of, like, I don't really remember this. Like, well, everything that he says did.
Girl.
Like he said that I did that. I don't know if I did.
Girl, you
want to
talk victim blaming. So when I'm feeling blue, I like to go to a little comedy website and just sort of read the posts. This comedy website is called Broadway World. it's
jokes abounding.
I haven't posted on this thing for fucking years just because the thing is so stupid.
Yeah.
Usually I go on it to like read people's stupid comments when they post like Broadway grosses, and people go like, oh, you know, Bandstand, you know, won't be in danger of closing. It has one set. It must be super cheap to run. I'm like, you obviously don't know how Broadway works in terms of finances.
Right.
But like, they don't rent you for the set and that's your only thing. But the Anthony Rapp Kevin Spacey thing was mind-boggling to read. The number of people who victim blamed Anthony Rapp and then went on to try to discredit him because they're like, I met Anthony Rapp 3 years ago at a bar in San Francisco and he was weird and very sexual. And it's like, excuse me? That doesn't discredit what he's saying right now. Maybe he is weird and sexual. That is his person that he is become.
He also like, could. He also could have some, like, you know, some issues dealing with sexual like wants and needs and urges. Because he was sexually assaulted. Oh
yeah, but like you would imagine of all places, the Broadway fan community, people would say, "What a terrible story! Oh my God! You know, what can we do to make this better?" The people who were going, where was his mother? People who were going, like, let's drag his mother through the mud. And then other people being like, you can't, she's dead. It's fucking, it was awful. And, oh my God, like, literally, people were just like, I met Anthony Rapp at the stage door at Rent in 1998, and he was mean, so I don't believe him. It's like, are you fucking kidding me? Awful. People can be really stupid and awful.
They can't be. Let me backtrack for 1 second, because what I did just say, I do just want to be clear. I'm not saying that anyone who, if he was either sexually awkward to other people in the past, that also that like gives anyone an excuse. I don't think like continuing a chain of sexual assault or awkwardness is. I just don't want to make. I want to make that disclaimer too. That like what I just said wasn't like, well, if he was sexually assaulted, of course he's going to be weird and he deserves to be sexually awkward towards people. That's not what I was saying.
No
disclaimer. Disclaimer.
Disclaimer. Yes.
Because
I also hate when people say use sexual as like a negative term because of things like this. People assume sexual means sexually aggressive. It's like,
yes.
I don't want to go back to that time where any sexual thoughts you had made you feel guilty and dirty. Like that is that is a very separate thing.
Yeah.
It's the not having consent that makes it awful. and a violation. So let's wrap this part up. What do you? Why don't you? Do you have any closing? Not arguments. You're not a council member.
No, I'm not. I'm not a council member. It's just. I don't know if I have any closing statements. It's just my mind was boggled and blown, and I was very upset and had a lot of emotions about this. I don't know. I don't have anything closing to say other than just like I don't know. I don't know. I
think if for anyone in John's life who is listening, remember, pedophilia and homosexuality are two very separate things.
Two separate things. I think it's just as all these things happen, as everything happens in life, it just goes down to the fact of like when you try to like hide things, or when you try to when like put things under the wrap, it's just honesty is the best policy, you guys. Like if you make if you make a mistake, you have to pay the piper. If you it's I don't know. I have nothing to say. I'm frustrated. I haven't had enough coffee, and I'm hungry. And fuck Kevin Spacey.
Six of one, half a dozen of the other.
I'm angry today. I'm sorry. I have a lot of I have a lot of emotions.
Well, to be fair, we brought up a very angry subject, so
yeah.
You know, it's an angry morning.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. You're the top.
Speaking of angry gays.
Yes.
I'm queen of transitions today. Yesterday. They announced that Ryan Murphy, like the gay emperor of Hollywood, is producing a Broadway revival. Actually, it'll be the first time it's been on Broadway ever of the 1960s play The Boys in the Band. So, John, you said you don't really know much about the work itself, about Boys in the Band.
I do not know much about Boys in the Band.
Okay.
I know NSYNC. I know Backstreet Boys. but not a lot
very
of Boys
similar.
In the Band. Yeah.
You could do a production of this play and just like substitute all of the characters for NSYNC members. It would probably work. I'll give a little bit of context, just because.
Please, that'll help me.
On this podcast, I have definitely become like the theater historian.
You are, and I'm Dooney's. Like I'm Dooney. Like I'm here for the bullshit, kids.
No, you're here for the sound bites. Everybody comes to hear your sound bites, and then they learn from me.
Exactly.
I'm the Sasha Velour. You're the Shea Coulee.
I don't know even if that. I might be the Shangela. I'm so far off.
Okay, Shangela then too. Like you, or like you're the Trinity Taylor. Like you give the sound bites, and I like sit here and talk about queer history.
I'll take that.
So, Boys in the Band was a play in the 1960s by a man named Mark Crowley, who didn't really do much writing after that. That was like sort of his one big thing, and it was one of the first major works to center specifically on homosexuality and deal with homosexual characters like at the forefront, and not only that, to be hugely successful. It was an off-Broadway play. It ran for a very long time. They turned it into a movie, and it hasn't really been done since, like not in any super major way, mostly because immediately after the play came out, like the play came out in 68, in 69 the Stonewall riots came out. The Stonewall riots happened. It was a thing. Oh. It wasn't a movie. It happened, believe it or not.
I know that. And I wasn't owing about that.
Not everybody knows that, so that's why you got to choose your wordings carefully. But yeah, because of that, the stance on homosexuality changed to the majority of the community going, we are no longer victims. We are in control of our life and who we are and how the world sees us. And Boys in the Band... is a play. It's sort of like a gayer Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, if that makes sense. It takes place at a birthday party on an Upper East Side apartment. It's all gays. It's one gay's birthday, and his like frenemy throws him this birthday party with a bunch of their friends. Booze is drunk, pot is smoked, and everybody gets super super vicious. A lot of people complain that it's like a very narcissistic view of homosexuality, that it portrays us only as cynical and, you know, self-deprecating and self-hating. And like, yeah, like all the characters in The Boys in the Band are not necessarily good people. But I would also argue that it's an important piece of our culture, and
yeah.
without it, it would not have paved the way for a lot more other gay works.
I was reading a little bit about it last night, and I didn't know that there was a movie, and so I actually was thinking, I was like, oh, I would be really interested in watching this before I hopefully see the Broadway production.
Yeah, the movie's pretty much the play. Like, it's pretty much just the play on screen. It's the entire original cast. William Friedkin, who did The Exorcist, directed it. Yeah, so, like, a lot of interesting close-ups.
Satan and gays go one in the same.
I mean, really, like, it's all the same umbrella, really.
Yeah.
It's like, if The Exorcist and Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf had a baby, it would be the movie The Boys in the Band.
Like, it's like, oh, honey, the power of dick compels me. Oh, honey.
Oh, fucking Jesus. Yeah, but so I'm very interested to see this production, to see sort of how it works with what is essentially a really fantastic group of actors,
yes.
who are also out and proud gay men, which I'm obsessed with, directed by Joe Mantello, who is still like one of the most brilliant play directors out there.
Yes.
Question. Yeah, question.
Are they all white?
The actors or the characters?
The actors.
No, not all of them.
Okay.
The four that made the headlines are white, yes. But
yes,
the play has one African-American character, and it's a very important part of who he is and who the ensemble is.
Great.
That was another thing
sure.
on Broadway.
I was not sure like, of that, yeah. Because the one thing I did notice, I was like, white men. I'm the pictures, I was like,
Alana Glazer.
So many white men. I know.
Yes.
White men.
To be fair... The play is very much a period piece, and I'm not trying to make this sound like I'm for like all white casting or whatever, but the way that the play is written, one character is specifically written to be African American, and it's a part of the dynamic of the group that he's
sure.
like the token black friend.
No, that makes sense to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's so fucking funny?
Life. Life's a goddamn laugh riot. You remember life.
You're stoned.
Happy birthday, Harold.
You're stoned and you're late. You were supposed to arrive at this location at approximately 8:30-9:00.
What I am, Michael, is a 32-year-old, ugly, pockmarked Jew fairy. And if it takes me a while to pull myself together, and if I smoke a little grass before I get up the nerve to show my face to the world, it's nobody's goddamn business but my own. And how are you this evening?
This is going to be gays just bursting out into, like, spontaneously combusting.
Oh, my God.
Even more so, I
heard an audio of one song of Mean Girls last night on Tumblr, and already my, like, little heart... It was a flutter.
Wait. Off the record, while being on the record, send it to me? Like, I need to
I'll send you the link. Yeah. I don't know if it's still up or not. Someone posted three songs from the first preview.
You always rip it. You always rip it. No.
Okay,
just kidding.
I gotta figure out
how. I actually have never seen a bootleg in my life. What? Who? What? I don't support
Who's
that.
Who, what, where, when, why? It's fine. If the producers are worried, I'm going to pay money to see the show. I'm not, like, this is not losing any kind of business.
Yeah.
Three songs were posted. I only listened to two of them. And I looked at, and I read some reviews of the show from the first preview, which, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
we can claim, oh, it's not a finished product yet, all we want. Like, that, it's just part of the course. And the whole reason why they're out of town is to get this kind of feedback. So, like,
yeah, totally.
Whatever. One of the critiques I had read was that the score was not particularly strong. People were, complaining that the songs mostly served their purpose, but they weren't particularly memorable or you know, well paced or structured. And
well,
Jeff Richmond, who did all the music for 30 Rock and Kimmy Schmidt, and I think the music on those shows work exceptionally well.
Right, but it's different than a musical.
Yes, it is his first musical theater score. That said, the two songs I did hear, granted, this is two out of like 20 songs. The two songs I did hear, I really enjoyed.
Nice.
One was the introductions of the Plastics, which apparently is part of a large... So there's a big number towards the beginning of the show where they introduce all the cliques at the cafeteria.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of like a pocket song within that song is the Plastics introducing themselves. But then the other one I heard was Janice's like big fuck you song in Act Two when they're after the fight has happened and they're all doing the trust fall thing. Janice's speech essentially has been turned into a song, which Barrett Wilbur Weed just fucking annihilates.
She, of course.
I love that girl's voice. It's one of those voices that, like, I compare it sort of to Patti LuPone and Evita when I heard her in Heathers, where it's like the kind of low alto-y, gravelly voice where you're like, oh, mm-hmm. she can't sing above a B, that's fine. And then she pops to an E clear as day and you, like, warm out of your seat. You're like, where the fuck did that come from?
Yeah.
So, like, it's musically, I thought it was very interesting. The lyrics were fine. I don't know. If that's indicative of what the rest of the score is like, I think we're in good hands. If some of the other songs maybe are not as up to par, grab Stephen or Remus, have him just sort of, you know, revocalize it, have him work the Kinky Boots magic that he did.
Get your music supervisor, get the,
yeah, exactly. Like, there, to be clear, even though this is Jeff Richmond's first Broadway score, there are some people who wrote their first Broadway scores that, if it weren't for the musical arranger, would not be what they are.
Mm-hmm.
It's an open secret that Glenn Kelly essentially wrote the score for the producers. Like, Mel Brooks would sing into a tape recorder, and then Glenn Kelly's like, great, let me turn this into Broadway.
Yes.
And Stephen Remus basically did the same thing for Kinky Boots.
Yeah.
So, like, if that's an issue, grab one of them, guys. Yeah. They will... Actually, I think Glenn Kelly is actually working on Mean Girls.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. But so, that said, my little gay heart was all aflutter listening to it. It was lovely. Get your ass in gear, make this whole town disappear. So last bit of news, we had another casting announcement this week, John. Why don't you take over for this one? Because I feel like your thoughts are going to be a little more well-shaped than mine. I'm still kind of processing.
I'm actually still processing as well, because I'm a little unclear as to what exactly the live action means. But I guess I'll just start this way. Like, from the day we arrive on this planet... So it seems Beyonce's gonna be in The Lion King and Donald Glover. The casting announcement for the live action remake of The Lion King came out with some huge names that I was not expecting.
No.
And I think from what I've seen, everyone seems pretty shooketh about it, but in a great way. Like, I don't know, like, I really liked Beyonce in the Dreamgirls movie. Like, mm-hmm. I know that she gets a lot of flack for her acting, but I actually really enjoyed her in that. I think it's gonna be really cool. I just am unclear. So, like, it's a live action remake. Is it CGI? Like, I'm confused.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't see the Jungle Book remake. Apparently, it's very similar to that, and apparently it actually worked very well in that.
But there are humans in the Jungle Book, so, like, I get that, but, like, this is all just the lions and the...
I think it's... So, unclear. Honestly, very unclear. Apparently, they're doing, like, a combination of different things. They are filming the actors with, like, motion sensors like they did with Polar Express.
Sure.
They are also filming real animals and then also CGIing those animals as well. So it's sort of like going to be a cross of all three together.
Gotcha. Interesting.
So explain to me more about your rationale of Beyonce and Dreamgirls. I would like to hear more on this.
I think I mentioned this multiple times, but until this summer, I had never seen a production of Dreamgirls. And so Dreamgirls was always a show that I did not know much about. So I did not have any preconceived notion. The movie, I guess, was the first time I've really seen it. And I don't know. I honestly, it's been years since I saw the movie, and I was much, much younger then. But I remember really enjoying her in it. I remember thinking that for a movie and for that character that she I remember thinking she did well. I don't know. Maybe if I watched it now.
No, I don't think she was bad in it. I mean, she was beautiful in it, first of all. Like,
gorgeous.
Yeah, there are certain movies where I'm just like, wow, this is like the most beautiful this woman could ever possibly look. Beyonce, of course, has proven me otherwise and has continued to be goddess-like afterwards. But yeah, but, like, even in that movie, I was like, fuck me. Yeah, have you ever listened to the concert version of Dreamgirls? The one with, like, Lilia Swired and Audra?
I've heard bits and pieces of it, but I'm not super familiar with it.
Yeah, it's a rough
Heather
recording.
Heather Headley, too, right?
Yeah, it's Heather Headley, who is not vocally well. She's...
No.
Yeah, like, apparently, like, they went back and re-recorded certain songs to make it a clearer recording, but Heather Headley is, like, doing this weird kind of, like, whistle tone when she should be belting from time to time. It's like not great. But it gives you a better indication of what the score is and what the show is.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, like, the movie, I did love it when it came out, but I tend to love every movie musical when it first comes out. Like, I'm always so wrapped up in the fact that we have one each
Same.
Year.
Yeah.
That, like, I just get, yeah, I have to see all of them twice, because the first time I'm always like, yes! And then the second time I'm like, okay.
Oh.
Yeah, like, literally, I cannot tell. The difference when I saw Rent and Nine twice in theaters, both times, the first time I was like, oh my god, we're living in a golden age. And then the second time I was like, fuck. I was like, oh, I liked this. The second time I saw Dreamgirls, I watched it and I was like, okay, like, there's definitely some good stuff to it. I think the first, like, 25 minutes of that movie is some brilliant filmmaking.
Yes.
They should have kept more of the recitative. They were super afraid to make it like an actual musical.
Mm.
They cut out so much of the, like, in-person singing. So when they got to Family, I remember when Jennifer Hudson started singing, "What about what I need?" Everyone in the theater just erupted in laughter because it was the first time they established that that's what they were doing. So that was troublesome, and. No, through no fault of Beyonce, they took away a lot of Dina's gumption, because in the show, she is very much, she grows up to very much be a diva. Like, mm-hmm. she starts off very, like, plucky, and she, of the three dreams, she's, like, the one who's the most gung-ho about, you know, getting work and, like, being there on time at the Apollo, and, like, she wants them to be stars. And then she goes from there to, this glamorous Amazon woman. And I thought that Beyonce kind of, like, did okay with both, but not fully inhabiting either at the same time.
Yeah.
But, like, it's also tricky, because, like, Dina doesn't really get a chance to vocally shine. Part of the problem is that, part of the drama in the show, and I will say that Beyonce has now kind of, she has forever painted that role to be sung by, like, pop, or wannabe pop divas, who now kind of oversing Dina, because the whole dramatic tension is that Dina's not as good a singer as Effie.
Right.
So to watch the dreams become incredibly successful in Act Two is both fantastic to see and also disheartening, because they're now making it with songs that are not as good, with vocals that are not as good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, we all can sort of understand that when you see people succeed, you don't want to shit on anybody who, you know, makes it in this world, but to see people succeed with, like, less than stellar work.
Yeah, I mean, that's
disheartening.
I get that. That all makes a lot of sense to me. I don't know. I have never seen the Lion King musical, and so I don't know if this is going to be much more of the musical. Is that a thing that's being talked about?
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Yeah, me neither. They've been kind of weird and hush hush about that. So I don't. Because Nala in the movie doesn't really do that much.
She's very passive.
She helps him, like, find the fact that he's the king, but I think it's interesting. I'm excited that Beyonce's in it. I'm way more excited, actually, for the bit role characters. I also really enjoy Donald Glover a lot, so I think he's a great choice for that. Although, like, wouldn't be my first choice. I don't look at him and think of, like, Regal King. I think of him as being hysterical, and I know that he has a lot of heart, too. But I think that's a great thing. I'm so excited about Billy Eichner and Seth Rogen. And I am so excited about, I believe it's Eric Andre and, not Jordan Peele, was it? It was Keegan-Michael Key.
And yeah, and yeah, they're hyenas. They're playing
they're
hyenas.
And I think there's a female who's a hyena, there's, but I'm not familiar with that actress. I don't know who she is.
John Oliver also is Zazu.
Yes, fun. So fun, yes. So fun. As another like, yeah, that's I think how could we not bow down to the greatness again? Like who could play Mufasa in a movie other than Sir James
Earl Jones?
Earl Jones, like
James Earl Jones.
That's like James.
His voice is chocolate and butter and cream mixed into one that somehow became a nutritious smoothie. It's great. I will say, I am only concerned with it only because I thought that the Beauty and the Beast live action remake was a piece of flaming hot garbage.
Oh no, really? I loved it.
I fucking hated it. I saw it on a date, and it wasn't even my choice. The guy I was going on the date with wanted to see it, and I was texting our friend Mike about it during the movie. And he's like, if your date likes it, you should like it too. Like, you gotta, be a good person.
Mike.
And I tried for like 15 seconds. He was like, I thought that was magical. And I was like, it was garbage.
Oh no.
I detested it.
I really liked it. I mean, maybe it's just because I went to the New York premiere and Bernadette Peters was sitting a row in front of me. I'm not kidding. And
we
also
have that on audio. Let's put that back on audio replay. I think that was in with Natalie Walker, White Men Writing Feminist Musicals, perhaps.
Bernadette Peters sat in front of me. So I loved the movie. Was it perfect? No. Did it take me a long while to warm up to Emma as Belle? Yes. But I don't know. I really loved it.
I'm trying to think of like things that I did like about it. I was very offended when they would rewrite lyrics to the songs that were already there. Like when they rewrote the lyrics to Gaston, I was like no fucking need.
Yeah.
I get that the original is not perfect, but I will say for an 80-minute animated movie, the amount of like plot and song and intelligence they can cram into it is astounding.
It's true.
Yeah, there are, I wouldn't say plot holes, but things left unexplained in the original is because it's 80 minutes. So I understand, like, if you want to kind of, like, patch over a couple of those things. But a friend of mine described it as, like, taking a really great one-liner and then turning it into an overkill monologue where you're just like, less can sometimes be more, and they just like over explain so much, and to the point where there are now new plot holes that they added, and like making the enchantress the beggar woman of the town, and like finding out that Belle's mom died of the plague. I was like so fucking pissed. And I hated the animation. I thought everybody I thought the Beast looked terrible. I hated all the new songs.
Let's be honest, you don't like it because there's gays in it. You heard it here, folks. Matt Coplick is a homophobic.
I went on a gay date and was homophobic about the movie. Yes. Yeah. I was enjoying the entire thing, and then for 0.025 seconds, saw LeFou dance with a man
on
the right side of the screen.
You saw sodomy in action, and you were like, nope, that's not.
I said, stop putting your political agendas down my throat. Only one thing goes down there, Kevin Spacey. Good day, folks.
I get it. It was funny. I appreciate the joke, but
I appreciate your humor.
Okay, I'm back.
Okay, yeah. I'm done being super critical of the movie because I've shat on it from here to Kingdom Come, and it makes me feel like a total Scrooge. So,
well, you should
go. Yeah, let's end this on a more positive note. So why don't you say your like a couple of lovely things about it, and then we'll end there.
Well, I really enjoyed it in a lot of different ways. It created some more plot holes, but I enjoyed the other ones that it filled in. I thought it was beautifully shot. I thought a lot of the I like, picture-wise, it was so appealing to my eyes. And so I really enjoyed that. And it was just, like, for me, it was, I think as an adult and someone now who is very involved in theater and it's my job and blah, 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 it's sometimes hard to go into something and not be super aware of things like kind of like schmurky lyrics, like what you just mentioned in that song, new song they wrote for it. However, I love anything that, for some reason, when my nostalgia can just take over, and that's what happened with this. And so I'm sure I just completely excuse things that in other shows I would be like, no, that was awful, I hated that. But I escapism, you know, if anything, if all the bullshit we've talked about today, between that and, I mean, everything, it was a tough week in New York. I mean, I all of a sudden I'm getting all these notifications like, are you okay, what's going on, you know, with the awfulness that happened with the van down in Lower Manhattan this week. Theater is here to be a part of it is to offer an escape from the awfulness. It's also to hold up a mirror to society, so we can look at ourselves and, you know, a la Boys in the Band, we can see what issues there are in society, what problems there are, and we can hopefully learn from that and grow and make it better. But I loved it. I loved the nostalgia it offered. I loved the escape it offered. I just thought it was beautiful. And I wanted to be Belle my whole life. And I just pictured myself in those Tom shoes of hers walking around France. I did.
Around France.
I loved her Toms. I was like, yes, Belle, get those Toms. Yeah, so that's why I really enjoyed it. So I am excited for this Lion King remake with this cast being announced. Mm-hmm. Do I understand what it really is? Is it the musical? Are there lions? I don't know. All I know is I'm excited. As we've established today, I'm not here for the information. I'm not here to give you the information. I'm here to give you emotional outbursts and a lot of vocal fry on this on this morning.
I think our rapport has become I serve up the information and then John spikes it with his opinions.
With my,
he's like, I am here.
I have feelings too.
Gay feelings.
You've also caught me at like the apex of the week because my therapy Skype session is tonight. So I've just had like all these emotions bubbling for a week, and tonight I get to cry about them, but now I have many feelings.
Many feelings. So many. All the tears.
All that being said, whatever was just said, I'm so sorry. I feel like every time I go away to, like, we have these plans of covering this and this and this and, like, guests, I throw a wrench into it, so I'm sorry. I'm sorry I throw a wrench, but I'll be back in the city next week.
But then you're going to be gone again.
For a week. I know, but we can, we got this, guys. Don't worry.
We're going to make this happen.
I know it seems like I'm a mess, and I am, but Matt isn't. So,
What's that Mean Girls line? It's like, I know it seems like I'm a bitch, but that's only because I was acting like a bitch.
It's only because I was acting like a bitch. So thanks, guys. Thanks for listening, as always. Let us know. We're still trying to get our social media presence out there. I love interacting with you guys. Tell your friends, tell your moms, tell your zaddies.
Tell if you have that aunt or uncle that does equate homosexuality with pedophilia, send them our way. We'll
send
them
my
way,
and they will learn
mm-hmm.
what a true homosexual is.
Yeah, if you know someone who loved the Beauty and the Beast remake, send them our way. John will make them feel good about themselves, and I will teach them why they're wrong.
Exactly. Brilliant. Well, Matthew, who would you like us to play? Who would you like to play us out today?
In the vein of Emma Watson and auto-tuning, I would like to go the exact opposite route. I would like Barbra Streisand, please.
Yes. Babs, play us out, mother. Oh, I love that. Good choice.
Yeah. Right, I'm thinking. Bye, everybody. Bye.
Oh, okay. Oh no. Okay.
Wait. What?
Sorry. No, you said you were thinking.
I was trying to think of what song I wanted to pick, but that was my inner monologue becoming my outer monologue. That wasn't meant for the mic. Great. Shit.
All right. That's totally fine. Well, let's just now do our goodbyes. Okay, well, okay, Babs, play us out. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everybody. We'll see you next time.
See ya.
I'm gonna raise the roof. I'm gonna carry on. Give me an old trombone. Give me an old baton before the parade. Pass it
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.